Hola, Locamores. Diosa here from Locatora Radio.
Y Mala to talk classic telenovela tropes. More like our bedtime stories growing up, no?
Sí, those dramatic switched at birth dramas or evil stepmoms hiding the fact that you're really the boss storylines still bring the gasps.
Like Fabuloso brings the passion to cleaning with 2x concentrated formula to take the drama out of any mess.
I don't know about you, but when I smell Fabuloso's remarkable lavender scent in my casa, I know it's all going to be happily ever after.
Fabuloso's 2x concentrated formula provides 2x more active ingredients versus non-concentrated Fabuloso Original. Use as directed.
You are listening to Dove Valley Deep Divers with Eric Trickle
and Lance Sanderson.
Ball comes out of the hands of Newton. It's on the ground, picked up by T.J. Ward at the 4-yard line. Vaughn Miller did it again.
On Overtime Media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dove Valley Deep Divers. This is yet another wonderful Friday night, and joining me on the Dove Valley Deep Divers now is Kenneth Booker. Kenneth, not the start to the season that we wanted, obviously, losing in Seattle, but at least we have some good news coming up. I mean, it's going to be a tough game against Pittsburgh Steelers, but the Mile High Huddle meet and greet is this weekend. Are you excited? I know you'll be there. How are you doing? You know, what were your thoughts on the Seattle game? All that.
I'm doing good, Eric. I hope you're doing well, too. I hope everybody out in the watching the show is doing well. For the Seattle game, I was a little bit wrong on how confident I was in Bo Nix. I felt like he was backpedaling a lot and throwing off his back foot, which made those throws come up short, come up behind. He seemed to get a little bit of his feet underneath him. The defense played really well, but they kind of burnt out and – that was another thing that I said. I felt like we were going to change that narrative of playing tough all game, keeping us in the game. And then when we need that stop, they were going to get that stop, and they were unable to by inches. Riley Moss played his butt off. He gave up, what, like 77 yards. But I think he impressed me enough to that. I was like, okay, I could see something in this guy. So we'll see. But I am excited for the meet and greet to see everybody. That's going to be awesome. We always win. It's going to be good weather. So, yeah. Mess with me. I'm Eric, so.
Yeah, and with the meet and greet, of course, I'll be there. Lance is making the drive down. Awesome. Nick will be there. Scott, I believe Luke and Thomas will both be there. I think Ron's going to be there. I'm not 100% sure on that. Of course, Chad's going to be there. So it's going to be a fun time, as it always is. And real quick, for the information about that, it is obviously the Sunday, September 15th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's going to be obviously in the parking lot of Empower Field at Mile High Stadium. Lot D specifically, you can look for the big blue MHH tent. That's where we all always hang out there in, you know, Lot D, not far from the main entrance. It's going to be a blast. I believe there's going to be some food. Just talking, hanging around, going to be able to get autographs if you want them. I believe there's going to be some gear available to get as well. It's always a good time. It's always a blast. And it's always nice to, you know, sit and talk with everybody, sit and talk with people. Some of you who watch and listen to the show, having you guys come up and talk to us, picking our brains or just asking, getting to know you all of that. It's just always such a fun time. I've been there every year so far, and I've never once walked away like feeling that it wasn't that great of a time or anything like that. But of course, the bigger thing is with this is Denver's 4-0 during meet and greet, 3-0 during meet and greet week. And obviously we're going to be hoping to keep that at 4-0, but there is a unexpected disappointing issue at quarterback, I guess, for the Steelers. Because I know I was, and I know a lot of Bronco fans were other Bronco fans were really hoping that Russell Wilson would be starting for them. Well, he's listed as questionable. Mike Tomlin basically said that he's not starting. It's been reported that he's not going to start. It's going to be Justin Fields, and that we won't see Russell Wilson. I am extremely disappointed in that because I wanted to count down the clock on him. I wanted to, you know, yeah, just boo him. And it's nothing personal, of course, but I mean, this guy came and played so poorly, not all his fault, before his contract extension even kicked in, and has put the Denver Broncos in such a bad spot financially. And so you can take all that anger and all that frustration out on him by booing him. So I was super hoping forward to that. And I think that while Justin Fields isn't the best quarterback, what he can do with his legs and the inconsistency of his passing game. He can go off like he did last year against the Broncos, throwing for 335 yards, or do next to nothing. In a way, I think it's a little bit tougher for this Broncos defense specifically to play against Justin Fields. Kenneth, what are your thoughts about, you know, not being able to play Russell Wilson and Justin Fields being the likely starter?
For the Justin Fields thing, it's like it's playing until the whistle. Don't let him break a tackle because you're not going to catch him. Also, I don't know if we're going to use a QB spy or if we're going to blitz him. But you got to play every down like it's your last with him. Not because he's proven that he's so great, but he's shown that he's capable of it. And I know in the history that we've had issues with athletic quarterbacks. We just gave up a huge touchdown to Geno Smith last week. So we got to be very disciplined on how we play our game, and everybody's got to be in their spots and not get too over aggressive. And when we do hit him, we got to make him feel us. We got to hit him hard. I don't like penalties, but like, if you're going to get a penalty, make it worth it, I guess. But no, I don't want anybody hurt though. That's,
yeah.
I like beating people. I like beating teams at their very best. I don't like when you had to beat teams because there's hurt players, and just for them and their families in general. Russell Wilson, I was the countdown. That would have been epic. That would have been so funny. And then started like a different where he thinks he has 2 more seconds, but he doesn't kind of thing. Starting 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and when it's like 8 or 9, whatever, or lower, whatever. Yeah. But yeah, I'm excited to see how it goes. But I have no idea what's going to happen in this game.
This is such a weird game because both sides can have a really good defense, but both sides also have a glaring weakness in their defense. The Steelers secondary outside of Minkah Fitzpatrick isn't the best. And the Atlanta Falcons had success passing the ball, and they had success running the ball on early downs. So, you know, Denver's going to want to try to mimic that. Whereas on the Broncos side of the ball, their passing defense is pretty decent. They obviously broke down late in the game against Seattle some, but the run defense started off hot, really faltered. We need to see a whole game from them, especially against the Steelers, whose rushing offense was a little on the inconsistent side. So it's this really weird game to figure out. And I know a lot of people are picking Denver to lose in this one. If Denver can stay ahead on early downs, getting ahead on early downs to where they're not in 3rd and 7+ and 3rd and long situations, I think they have a pretty decent chance to walk out of this one with the win. TJ Watt is obviously such a difference maker as a pass rusher, but when you look at his stats in 3rd and medium and 3rd and short situations, he is not quite the difference maker you would expect. A mm-hmm. lot of his sacks and pressures over the last 2 years have come from getting teams into 3rd and long situations. Avoid that, and you can somewhat limit the impact he can have. He will still have his own, especially against Mike McGlinchey, but getting ahead on early downs is going to be so crucial for this Broncos offense that we don't know if they can do that or not after one game.
Well, Mike McGlinchey's last game wasn't the greatest. He gave up a team high 5 pressures. He's really going to need to work on that. Quinn Miners openly criticized his own play, saying that his mind wasn't right, whatever. He just wasn't, his timing and everything was all off. His hand checks and stuff like that were off. So I want to see how he works out with Cam Hayward right now. But, yeah, TJ Watt. So we have those short passes and stuff like that, but they tend to be behind the yard or, like, 2 yards tops. We got to get them over 3-4 yards so that even if they do tackle us right away, we're dealing with, like, 3rd and 3s and not 3rd and 7s. So they really don't know what our plays are going to be, even though I would still guess it's going to be a pass just based on how our run performed in the first game. But yeah, TJ Watt is going to be a handful. I don't know how they're going to deal with him. We don't really have big blocking tight ends to chip off on him and help out, but we'll see if we just go right at him and maybe that's how we counteract it.
Now, real quick, going to say hello to some people in the chat. We have David Youngkin coming in saying, evening, everyone. So Vele is out. Question for what happened to that 6-foot tight end from the Chargers on the practice squad. Still, that makes no sense. I'm not sure. Donald Parham is the tight end.
He's 6'8". Yeah.
I'm not sure what the rest of that is. Signing Donald Parham, he is a type of tight end that can somewhat bring you what Greg Dulcich can and can be a weapon in the red zone. Despite the hype for Lucas Kroll, he isn't quite that tight end. So Donald Parham on the practice squad makes sense, especially with Joe Lombardi having been his offensive coordinator there in the Chargers. We have C Chain coming in, William Catalano, Todd Ossendorf as well in the chat. We've got Roy Osborne, DeAndre Witherspoon, and let's see here, Money Moore saying Steelers win 20-9. Daniel Berry, Amy Ailes coming in. Good to see. And Jeffrey Arlano, looking forward to seeing everyone Sunday, bringing some of my buddies to the tent. Looking forward to seeing you there, Jeffrey. DeAndre Witherspoon, this is a good one. With Devon Vele out, Troy Franklin said today that he's going to be active. Obviously, we'll have to wait and see if that's actually the case. There's been times before where a player said they'll be active only to be inactive. I would expect Franklin to be playing, but Mims, this is the one, the receiver I want to talk about. Mims playing only 12 snaps on offense against Seattle is mind-boggling to me, especially after they traded Jerry Jeudy, and one of the reasons Sean Payton gave was that they needed to get Marvin Mims some snaps. It has to be something going on inside the building with Marvin Mims, either not knowing the offense, having issues running routes. Chemistry with Bo Nix could be a case of it, but there's got to be something that's keeping him off the field, because this offense that lacks explosive plays in general, especially on offense, they could use Marvin Mims even as a decoy to stretch the field and help decompress, you know, opposing defenses.
Yeah, that's what I don't understand. Maybe I just don't know enough about football, but it's like, just have them go out there and flies and just stretch the defense out and open up the middle of the field. And if they have the guts not to, or the awareness not to cover that guy going deep, see if you can burn him deep. I don't know, a couple times a game, but just this swing pass, 4-yard pass. If you don't have that down perfectly, it's super ineffective. The people that have it down perfectly are like a Peyton Manning and a Tom Brady. They were money with that. They can turn 4-yard catches into 14-yard passes or 9-yard passes. But if your 4-yard passes end up being 4-yard passes and that's it, it's going to – your receivers are going to can be dealt with extremely physically. They're going to deal with linebacker hits coming across the middle. Like, I don't know. You just – you got to get those guys involved to stretch and open up the field.
Yeah, I'm going to pull some up here as well. And one of the things with these short passes, and you kind of touched on it, is you need those receivers who can make people miss, who can get those yards after the catch and make an impact that way. And Denver doesn't have them. That's never been Cortland Sutton's game. That's not Marvin Mims' game, really. He's a speedster guy that's going to stretch the fields or outrun people outside or on, you know, bubble screens or those quick swing outs or whatever from the wide receiver.
Jerry Judy's kind of, yeah, he was pretty good at that. But
Jerry Jeudy was decent at it. Troy Franklin, that's not his game. Lil Jordan Humphrey, that's not his game. So they don't have this guy. So you can't sit there and consistently throw passes behind the line of the scrimmage and expect good things for it. There can be a quick passing game, and there needs to be with Bo Nix, but it can't be these bubbles and swing outs. It needs to be slants, ends, you know, these things that have them going beyond the line of scrimmage, even if it is a quick slant for 3 or 4 yards, 3 yards on first down, 3 yards on second down, depending on what it is, can get you ahead of the sticks on those downs and keep you from being in a third and long. Whereas a first down bubble or swing out to a wide receiver that goes for a -3 yards, you're automatically behind. The next play, you have to get 7-8 yards to be ahead on third down, now on second down, and that is going to be an issue with the Broncos if they aren't able to find this explosiveness for them. But getting to the other element of this, talking about these passes behind the line of scrimmage, Bo Nix's passing chart here, 9 of his passes were behind at or behind the line of scrimmage. Like, 9 out of 26, or 42 if you want to count incompletions.
I wonder how many of those people got tackled behind the line of scrimmage, too. Probably all of them.
I'm pretty sure all but maybe one of them did. It didn't go very much, and he missed some throws that were expected to be completed. There were a couple drops. Like, it was an issue of everyone this last week. But to me, the biggest issue was Sean Payton. And if you're going to beat the Steelers at home in the home opener, Sean Payton has to do better.
Definitely. You never see when they get thrown a ball, like it's not a lateral pass. It's still a forward pass. It's 3 or 4 yards behind the line of scrimmage. They see two guys bearing down on him. Why don't they just do a like Hail Mary situation, just knock it to the ground? But they tend to catch it and then lose 4 yards. I don't ever understand that.
Yeah, I don't get it. It's just different. It could be a situation of, you know, uncertainty of it being a forward pass or not.
And yeah, so
have them rule that it was a backwards, a lateral and all that. But we have Phil McLaughlin coming in saying, good evening, Eric and Kenneth. Yak has to improve. I would like to see Nix out of the pocket running some RPOs. Yes. One of the best things I think from this last game that can carry over against the Steelers, Bo Nix's running ability. Let's use that a little bit more and see what that can do. And then Phil also coming in saying, thought you were on your way to Denver. Real quick, this is going to be a shorter show. We'll probably be wrapping up here in about 10 to 15 minutes because I have to finish getting ready and on my way to board a plane to start flying to Denver.
What are you going to bring for us? You going to bring some Alaska fish or something? I guess
I can bring. I can probably, you know, get some crappy store-bought smoked salmon. I don't have any at home to bring with me, but I can get some stuff. There's some pretty cool stuff that they have at, you know, the gift shops there on the other side of Security in Anchorage. Todd Osdorff, 9 of 42 attempts behind the line of scrimmage. So what? 9 of 42 yards behind the line of scrimmage is a bad thing when you don't have wide receivers who can break tackles and make plays happen. That's why. That's the point we were making. That's what I'm getting at here.
Yeah.
Is it's all fine and dandy if you have those receivers.
If you have a Demaryius Thomas.
Make people miss. Demaryius Thomas. Debo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk. If you have these guys that can make people miss, then yeah, you can do that. And no. And then any screen can start like that. And if executed well, go for big yards. Exactly. If it's executed well, it can go for big yards. The Broncos weren't able to execute their screens very well last week. I think they had one screen that was rated successfully, which is one of those 9 passes. But if it's not executed well, if your receivers aren't breaking tackles, then you're just wasting a down. That's the point that we're getting here. It's a waste of a down to do that if you don't have the receivers or you're not able to execute a screen properly.
It's all about picking your timing with that screen too, to where something is working so well to where you're going to use that against them by using that screen. And I don't know. It's feel like they just always see it coming. They're like, oh, screen. Out screen, and it's just like, oh, this is like almost like a trick kind of play, whatever. And it's the worst one to not trick somebody at because you're going to get caught for a 5-yard loss.
Yeah, and that's I'm very outspoken as a hater of screen plays in general, just because they have such a low success rate in the first place. And when they're successful, it's one of the most exciting plays out there. But they're successful less about 5% of the time per team, like. So
what's considered success, like just like 5 yards and more?
It depends on down and distance.
Okay.
So it's based on a certain percentage of yards. So a run on first down that is at least 4 yards is considered a success. A pass for at least 4 yards is considered success. So it's just based off of that.
Okay.
Casey Nickel coming in. What does our cap situation look like next year compared to this year? Well, the Broncos had to restructure Courtland Sutton's contract yet again after touching it, giving him some extra incentives, changing some stuff around earlier because the Patrick Surtain extension, that put some more money on the salary cap this year, which would have brought the Broncos over the salary cap. So they currently sit with about $7 million in salary cap space now, which, depending on what they use, they can roll over until next year. Next year, they are sitting at about $7 million, in salary cap space for next year, which, with the rollover, that can, you know, adds, that can bring it up to $80 million. And it also depends on what the salary cap is expected to be. I've heard a wide range of projections, and so we're not quite sure what it is. I think this is off a projection of, I can't remember what it is, but they're projected to have about $70 to $80 million at the moment, and they can they'll be able to free up some extra money.
Call me. You can call me. It's way less than those guys. I'll do.
You can throw me out there. I can be in a game day.
$100,000 a year.
But it's they're in a better position next year. They do have some guys still that they would need to resign. Baron Browning's a free agent. Jonathan Cooper's a free agent. Garrett Bowles, both backup quarterbacks, Jarrett Stidham, Zach Wilson, Cody Barton was only signed to a 1-year deal. Tre'Mont Smith, the punter, Riley Dixon. Those are the big names that are free agents right now. Jaquan McMillan is an exclusive rights free agent, so he doesn't have a whole lot of negotiating power. Todd, you're missing some very important points here when it comes to screen passes.
Were they Tyreek Hill and Casey? Kelsey?
A good portion of them were.
As the Tyreek Hill, like, that's like Demaryius. Like,
and
like, he might get hit at 3 yards, but. Or he might.
And the Chiefs are one of the best executing screen teams in the NFL. Like, they definitely help raise the average overall, just because it's so well coached by them, and that's good for them. But their success rate, even then, is still not even 10%. So, that's that. Yeah. Screenplays are overrated, and not all passes behind the line of scrimmage were screenplays. And when you have 9 passes behind the line of scrimmage to wide receivers and running backs who struggled to make people miss and can't pick up yards after the catch, you're putting yourself behind and you are wasting those downs. If you're going to do screens, then teach up your blocking crew for those screens how to better execute. And yeah.
Well, what do you think about that, like, fake screen where they go from one side and then they flip the other side? I know it takes forever for the play to develop, and they rarely do it. It's like a 50-50. I don't know.
I hate it. I hate screenplays. I hate big screens. Like, I hate the screen reverse. Because screens, it's once you sit there and you make that fake to one side, 9 out of 10 times the corners and defensive backs on the other side are going to break on their receiver. Just in case. So you're wasting that time that can be used to get the ball there. And yeah, and Todd, no, I've seen that before, and it was like 30 of those 37 were Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. Like,
that's
it was a high percentage of them.
When you have those screens that are busted plays where they're coming around the other side and they're 10 yards, why don't they just throw the ball? Is it the legal man down the field kind of situation? Is that why
It could be, yes. And it's stuff like that can get tricky, too, because of positioning of the offensive line. There's certain... I can't remember the exact rule for it as to what is legal man downfield versus what isn't. Because I remember one time they were arguing that because most of the 1 foot, most of the body was over it. It's a little bit different from quarterbacks with, you know, illegal forward pass, but it's really tough, but we got to do better. Obviously on offense, there's no arguing that the offensive line has to do better. Although the offensive line to me got far more hate against Seattle than they deserved. This isn't a defense of them. They were still bad overall. But Mike McDonald, like 60% of his blitzes, consistently brought 3 men against 2 blockers, which is an issue of the Broncos diagnosing the blitz up front, simulated pressures from Mike McDonald, who is an absolute genius with simulated pressures. It's why he was so coveted as a defensive-minded defensive coordinator going to head coach. They got so many pressures with the free rusher. It was like, I can't remember the exact number. They had the highest rate of unblocked pressures in the NFL week 1. at like 60% of their total pressures. But even then, an unblocked pressure, still a 3-on-2, and there's a play out there that shows it. The simulated pressure where the linebacker comes in and mugs the A gap and drops into coverage. But Wattenberg and Miners and McGlinchey triple team one guy because Wattenberg was going to help take care of the A mug blitzer. Whereas three guys are going against Powers and Bowles. Powers is trying to block two of them at once, and both of them end up basically breaking through Powers. So it is a bit of an issue with, you know, with that. And the Steelers, they're not quite that creative with their pass rushes up front. They rely very much on winning with the talent they have, which they can do. So it creates a different challenge for this offensive line of, can they handle the great pass rushers the Steelers have at front? Because Seahawks, they don't really have those proven great pass rushers yet. And we're relying on their blitzes, the simulated pressures to get guys after the quarterback. And Phil Scott isn't in the background. It'll be a while before he's back on Friday nights because some family stuff, sports with his kiddos. But we'll get him back here soon.
Yeah, well, this reminds me of why you need to protect Bo Nix from the game last night. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't even a big hit. He initiated the hit.
Yeah, he was running for it and lowered his head into contact.
It's sad, man, because he seems like a guy who just loves to play the game.
Yeah.
Happy guy. People seem like they love to play around him. I remember we said we had that Whedon, but Bronco fans, and I probably was part of it, whatever, but the tank for Tua kind of little discussion. But yeah, it's a scary game, and like you can't have your guy running too much. That's one of the things I used to like about Russell Wilson in Seattle days, not more Bronco, but his former baseball experience allowed him to slide really well, where I've seen like a Drew Lock or a couple other guys look like they almost tore their ACL sliding. I don't know. We got to protect Bo, and we got to, I know Michael Burton got activated. So maybe yeah, that's
roster with Audric Estime going to injured reserve. And then they signed, totally the space, the name as to who they signed back to the, who they signed to the practice squad to replace Michael Burton.
I just saw the Michael Burton part.
Bringing Michael Burton back to the active roster, not surprised it happened. He was signed for the veteran minimum benefit salary or whatever it's called. I can't think of what it is, which he gets paid like $1.2 million, but only like 800,000 of it actually counts against the salary cap or something to that effect.
Oh, poor guy.
It's nice. Like for a team that's not in the best salary cap spot, penny pinching where you can helps. Unless it comes to wide receiver DJ Jones or extending Garrett Bowles for whatever reason. But I digress. So before we get out of here,
with the receivers, when do you start to get worried? And who are some receivers that you kick the tires on? I know there's Michael Thomas is always kicked out there. There's Hunter Renfro, stuff like that.
I am not sure who is available. I haven't looked at that. I know Michael Thomas, but I just remember Michael Thomas and Sean Payton going at each other week in, week out when they were both with the Saints. Mm-hmm. Like there was such a like toxic relationship between the two of them. And with the young guys Denver has, especially with Troy Franklin having some of those attitude types concerns coming out of college, I'm not sure I would want that around him. I'm not concerned yet, just because it is a new quarterback, and especially the Caden Davis. Thank you. He was with Denver before, and thank you for the super chat as well.
Appreciate that, Cody.
I'm not super worried because of the type of defense that Seattle plays. They play a tight zone defense, and this is where not playing Mims and Franklin being inactive really hurts. Tight zones can help spread them out and pull those deeper zones away instead of letting them play closer to the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. It was a defense that Bo Nix has never seen before in college football. completely unused to it. And it was a rookie head coach who you could use some of what he did as a defensive coordinator to try to figure out what he might do. But it's dang near impossible because of the talent difference of who they have, the players.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of that went into it. And even though we talked about it last year, I think the noise rattled some people on offense, including Bo Nix. It definitely seemed to rattle them a little bit with how loud it was. So I'm not ready to give up on this wide receiver core yet. I still think that they have a lot of potential to be a really good unit. It's just a matter of getting things figured out and better play calling to better utilize their skill sets.
I felt like Philip Dorsett, if you don't want to bring back Troy Franklin, I feel like he kind of had a decent rapport with Bo. But yeah, they just got to be able to – the timing – I'm not even breaking tackles. The timing just has to be down to where they're catching it and they're just out of the fingertips of the DB, almost like how Riley Moss was with Tyler Lockett. He barely got him down, which he would have stopped the first down if Baron Browning didn't jump offside. So
yeah,
that was – that was brutal.
Todd Ossendorf saying Tim Patrick's still available. Technically, yes. Technically, no. He's with the Detroit Lions practice squad. And when he signed with them, it was with a promise from them that they will be brought up to the regular roster at some point soon.
Oh, okay.
So maybe you can convince him to come back for it off the practice squad. But I think that would be tough to do. And Cody coming in. Davis has speed to his game, but that's about it. Yeah, he's a deep threat guy or a return specialist. That's about all he is. And so it's another guy. And I've seen some people make the argument that Sean Payton's offense doesn't call for a deep guy. Call for those deep shots, but it does. And it always has been. And even if they don't get a ton of targets, it still opens up so much more underneath. It spreads out the defense a little bit thin and creates more space. And the type of West Coast offense that Sean Payton runs, the basis of his offense, it's all about spacing. Creating spacing in the defense for your quarterback to hit the receivers without having to make, you know, a super tough throw. And then you use that to try to get the safeties and deep and defensive backs to cheat their deeper coverage to help protect a little bit under and then attacking deep off that. Marvin Mims, Troy Franklin, their speed to challenge deep can still affect that. And their speed and quickness can still help if you want to keep, you know, those behind the line of scrimmage passes, those bubble screens, those swing outs, all those, their speed can still help with that as well.
Yeah. And then there's who was the last guy that had that success with that? Was it Brandon Cooks? I know he's, what is he at the Cowboys?
I don't know where he's at anymore.
I think he's like their number two. And it's like a should be number three, but he's their number two.
He is with Dallas. Well, he bounced around. I know he was there with them last year, and he was bouncing around the league for so long. I didn't realize he was still in Dallas.
Let's give him let's do a little trade with Dallas. We'll trick him. We'll give him an 8th-round pick that doesn't even exist. But I'd like to see somebody and just give the guy a chance. Those guys, not Brandon Cooks, but like Mims or Franklin. Just keep it fresh in the defense's eyes, stretch the field. And I feel like when I mean, it was college and it was Caleb Williams, the Oklahoma with Mims, but I saw him make those big plays, those contested, not just a speedster, like a legit receiver kind of play. So I don't know. Give him a chance.
I agree with you. And I definitely have some takes on Sean Payton and his play calling that I'll sit on for a little while longer because I want to see how things progress over the next few weeks. But that's going to have to do it for us tonight as I got to get out of here. I got to get ready, make sure I have everything together to go down to Denver for the meet and greet, which, by the way, the meet and greet is this Sunday, September 15th for the Pittsburgh Steelers game from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. You guys can find us at the parking lot, Lot D specifically, at Empower Field at Mile High Stadium. You can come check out, have some food, have some drinks, chat with us, you know, get autographs if that's what you want, get some gear, all sorts of stuff will be there and available. Just looking to have a wonderful time. But before we get out of here, I'm terrible about reading the MHH roundtable piece. How did you have this game turning out?
So I had it still optimistic. Not as much about our offense as I would like to be. I think I had a 16-14 Broncos. I think the defense is still going to hold up. I think they played really well. I think they know they had to play well, so maybe they won't take their foot off the gas as much as maybe they did. I'm thinking they – I don't know. It was a tight game, so maybe they didn't take their foot off the gas. But I have us squeaking out a last-second Will Lutz field goal again. It's going to be a touchdown and three field goals for the Broncos and 16-14 Broncos.
So my score prediction was – played into my bold predictions as I do every single week. I try to make a match or equal up. I have Will Lutz kicking 5 field goals and Cortland Sutton catching 1 jaw-dropping touchdown for 22 points and winning 22-16.
Yeah, I'm going to get Will Lutz on my fantasy team then.
We'll see. I went 0-10 on my bold predictions for week 1, although I came close on multiple of them.
Yeah.
7 penalties instead of 10. You know, Jonathan Cooper got the 2 sacks, not Baron Browning. Got close, but just a little off. But anyways, that's going to do it for us. As always, this is the Mile High Huddle podcast. You guys can follow us at MHH or the MHH pod on Twitter. You can also follow us on Twitter at Mile High Huddle. That is the mother account, the mothership account, if you would like. That's where you can get all access to all the shows, all the written content, all that kind of stuff there. You can follow us on Facebook.com/MileHighHuddlePod as well as Facebook.com/MileHighHuddle. Check out MHHmerch.com to get y'all swag on, as our boss Chad would like to say. You can get wonderful hats like this. You can get different mugs. I believe there's a lot of mugs for Broncos for breakfast because they're the coffee drinkers and that's their thing. I'm not much of a coffee drinker myself, so no Dove Valley Drivers mugs. Different shirts, different sweatshirts, things like that. You can follow us on Instagram at MileHighHuddle with an underscore between mile and high and high and huddle. Make sure you go to Spotify or Apple and leave a 5-star review for a chance to win some swag each month. And as always, if you're unable to help support financially, which we understand times are tough and it's only going to get tougher as the holidays start to approach, you can just do a simple matter of some time, about 15, 30 seconds to subscribe, like, and share. It helps us out so much, especially on YouTube and Facebook now that they've changed some of their algorithm stuff around to get us to more eyes and get more attention, which can translate to helping us all out financially, because honestly, without you guys, we would not be able to do what we do. It's without your guys' support, I wouldn't be able to do this for a full-time job. So I appreciate that. So much. I see a lot of people saying that they wish they can make it to the meet and greet. There's always next year. I know Chad wants to make this a yearly thing. Hopefully if you can't make it this year, hopefully next year, or the year after, or the year after that.
Remember the
hopefully
virus?
Hopefully by then we're actually a good football team.
Remember the virus ruined that? We were going to do like the draft, wasn't it? And then Vegas?
That's what Chad and Zach still did it, and a few people showed up to it.
I think they were going to do that boat, though. Not us.
Oh, yeah, the boat thing for the
draft picks.
Yeah, and they ended up having to change that. But
I don't know if that would have worked.
That's going to do it for us. As I said, I got to get out of here. Oh. I got to go so shower. But any last words?
Yeah. So they're going to have a Denver Tacos and Marks crawl in downtown tomorrow. And then Louisville for today and tomorrow, they're going to have a Oktoberfest downtown Louisville. So anyway, yeah, have a great safe trip, Eric. Oh, yeah. Look forward to hanging out again. Last time we hung out, I had a great time with you and Lance. It's going to get
It was like almost all day, too. Like,
yeah, that was so much fun.
It was a blast.
Everybody else... it's going to be so awesome seeing you.
That was the first meet and greet, wasn't it? With the against the New York Jets?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was so there for them.
Looking forward to it. I get there bright and early tomorrow. I've got some things planned to, you know, go see some of the city. Every time I'm in Denver, I never really get around to see it. I was down there in Boulder last May, a year ago. So 2022 or 2023 May, went to the zoo and the aquarium, took my daughter to it, but, getting a chance to be there by myself, go see a few places, a couple, you know, board game shops, and other, you know, shops like that I'm going to go check out and Uber around to go check them out and everything. But anyways, that's going
to
do it.
Just go to Second and Charles. Go to Second and Charles for those Funkos in the back. They have an insane
I'll have to check it out. But anyways, guys, thank you guys for watching. Have a wonderful weekend. Stay safe. And As always, go Broncos.
You are listening to Dove Valley Deep Divers with Eric Trickle
and Lance Sanderson.
Listen, everyone makes messes. It's just a part of life. And the bigger you live, the bigger the mess, if you know what I mean. That's why you need Fabuloso. With twice the active cleaning ingredients, it just completely takes the drama out of any mess. It smells great while you clean. The only way to describe it is the scent of passion. And once you're done cleaning, it lasts so long. You know, if you make a mess, you can get your home dramatically clean with Fabuloso. No worries.